You're listening to Dynamo's Dozen. Now let's welcome your host, Dean Dynamo Kelly.
Welcome back to Dynamo's Dozen, the podcast that I bring you each and every single week where I talk about whatever may be on my mind, from pro wrestling, sports, entertainment, music, movies, muesli, fresh socks and jocks, and everything in between, never forgetting the talc. I've waited a while to say that, and I hope the wait has been worth it, because today I've blown off what was to be a very important day, actually. But in favor of something even more important, because who better to bring in the summer of Dynamo's Dozen than my good friend Finlay Martin? How are you doing, Finlay?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me back on the show, and I'm glad to be somebody who's bringing it back again.
You certainly are.
So yeah, really good.
You always bring it.
So I always enjoy appearing on the show, and I obviously do a Power Slam podcast each week, but this is a very different format, and different is good. We all need variety in our lives.
Different is good. Be sure to go and subscribe to the Power Slam podcast every week. I think you guys are on Spotify, and that's where I listen to you anyway, and I'm sure Apple, yes, iTunes, everywhere you find good good podcasting, I suppose, hosts, Twitcher, or no, sorry, what is it, Stitcher?
It's on Podomatic, yeah, and Mixcloud as well.
Yeah.
And there's so many of those places.
There's so many.
You listen to podcasts.
It's available. So it's available everywhere. Put it that way. And you guys, anything else going on?
That wasn't supposed to turn into a big plug for the Power Slam podcast, by the way, but it did anyway, and I'll take it.
You're happy. I'm always happy to plug yourself and Kenny. It's no problem. It's no problem. obviously.
What, quite a while since I've been on? What have you been up to? What have you been up to in the interim?
I've a lot of podcasting still. Obviously, we've ran a new show, the ASI, which stands for American Sports Ireland, where we cover ice hockey, NBA, American football. Myself and my co-host Darren Marr. So that's been really fun. That's been a weekly show that's kind of taken the mind off. Not even taking the mind off wrestling, I suppose, giving me something entertaining to watch other than some of the wrestling that I've been subjected to over over the summer. It gives me a chance to follow the hockey, which is in a bubble, obviously, over in the States now, as well as the basketball. So always been a big hockey fan. It's cool to kind of watch different sports and see the format and how they're kind of handling their setup during this, obviously, pandemic. And
They're not allowed crowds back yet, are they?
No, they're in a bubble, basically. So, I mean, the NBA is in Disney World, and like all the teams are staying in the jurisdiction. They're not allowed to leave. And it's the same. I think there's two hub cities then for the hockey up in Canada, one in Edmonton, one in Toronto. So it's the same there. They're all within that one bubble there. So it's kind of a cool format that they've set up. Other than that, trying to stay sane, obviously not working or anything at the moment, but I've been doing a decent job at staying sane. I wasn't sane to begin with anyway, Finlay, so not much has changed.
Well, wrestling will do that to you. You
know? Yes.
Wrestling has that effect on people.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You just become insane by association. It's what about yourself?
I'm sure other sports do as well.
Oh yeah. These hockey guys are insane when they're like getting their teeth smashed out by pucks and stuff. So, it's pretty interesting. Entertaining.
I've been to one professional ice hockey game, which was a New Jersey Devils game.
Oh, nice!
And I was in America for WrestleMania 15, and I went to see the New Jersey Devils. This would have been March of 1999, and I'd seen it on TV, and I'd seen you know, sort of like Slapshot, you know, the Paul Newman movie, the ice hockey movie from,
yes,
from
yes.
77, 78 or 76, around about that. I was always a big fan of that film. And I thought that really did illustrate how violent the game was back then.
Yeah.
In the 70s. And I remember just being astounded at all these fights breaking out. And then each time a fight broke out on the ice, they just stand around and let them punch each other. Yeah. And then on the big... Then on the big screen, they would show fight scenes from Blazing Saddles. That's... You know, the Mel Brooks movie?
Yeah, amazing.
So it was like the Mel Brooks film, show the fight scenes from that. So that was like, you know, a satire. That was like just silly. So they're kind of making light of it.
Yeah.
I was a bit astounded by that. And then at one point during the game, the puck ended up flying off the ice and smashing some poor woman in the head. And she had to be rushed out of there. So oh. I was, yeah, it was quite an experience, really. I've never been back.
Yeah, it's a hell of a sport. It's really cool. So you've been keeping busy yourself, obviously, during lockdown.
Yes. Yeah, I've continued writing, doing the podcast and everything. So it hasn't really affected me that much, to be honest. I'm definitely one of the lucky ones. So, yeah, I've kept up with the biz. I mean, as you know, most wrestling has continued, or at least TV wrestling has continued. Obviously, a lot of indie stuff hasn't. Although I understand that some shows are restarted. One of the photographers who used to shoot for Power Slam, he put a post on his Facebook page, Bob Mulren, and it was saying that he'd been and photographed his first show in many months. So I know things are kind of starting again for smaller promotions.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not just, you know, not just the, you know, obviously AEW. Impact, WWE have all got their TV contracts to fulfill. So, you know, they've been running shows with no fans present. And, you know, in some cases, obviously Impact's got no one in the audience, or at least it didn't have up until a couple of weeks ago. I'm a couple of weeks behind on Impact, but obviously WWE's got the trainees in the audience behind the Perspex to provide some atmosphere. And AEW has quite a few people watching in the crowd, doesn't it? Again, you know, paid performers who are under contract or nightly deals or whatever. But I think, you know, that atmosphere is important, so I understand why those people are there.
Yeah, it's good to see, I suppose, because you want to see people obviously still in a job, and obviously these a lot of these indie companies, they need, you know, to kind of get up and running for the, you know, for the sake of their business, and even training schools and stuff like that. So I've seen a lot of great kind of stuff, you know, throughout the pandemic, where people were selling t-shirts and supporting their favorite kind of their favorite wrestlers that wouldn't necessarily be on that big money contracts with the two big boys. So it's been cool to see.
Yeah.
I seen a piece of news there. I don't know much about it, but it's actually going to be interesting. New David Arquette film is coming out, a documentary about David Arquette's return to wrestling. You cannot kill David Arquette. The trailer's popped up, so that'll be interesting to see.
I've got to say, I often wondered why he decided to actually become a wrestler. This was a couple of years ago, wasn't he? And he was doing like death matches and taking like a lot of punishment, wasn't he, in some of those matches. I was thinking, well, why is he doing this? You know, at this point in his life, he would have been like late 40s at that point. I mean, I know his acting career has kind of dried up. You know, he's obviously had a good run with the Scream movies.
There's a new one coming out. There's a new Scream movie coming out, I just heard today as well, yeah.
Is it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, his acting career had kind of dried up, but it didn't feel to me like, why is he doing this wrestling? I know he was always a fan, obviously he was a fan, but it's quite a drastic move to get involved in wrestling when you're at that point in your life, when presumably you're financially secure as well. I mean, he can't be earning too much money from his wrestling bookings, surely.
I wouldn't imagine.
He was only working small shows, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange one, because he talked about he was like stabbed in a wrestling match in 2018 and all that, and it was like, what in the name of, what are you doing, son? You know, you're 48 years old. Relax.
Yeah.
But I guess that's it. The business does that to some people. I know what it's like. It's like a drug Once you get a piece of it, it's very, very difficult to get out of your system. You're just an addict, you know what I mean? for life. So I can
I mean, certainly the point I was just gonna make about David Arquette was I kind of thought there might be some type of documentary or film crew following him around and then making something like that out of this, which he would then sell, and here we are. It all makes sense now. Maybe he was doing this because he saw this as a way to sell a documentary worldwide, and that could up his profile, and maybe he'd start getting more acting gigs. Maybe he's a tough guy. What do you think?
Oh, I like the sounds of that, actually. That's a good idea, because obviously they've seen the success of all these, Beyond Dark Side of the Ring documentaries and stuff like that. So a lot of those documentaries are entertaining for people that are, you know, not even fans of wrestling, just casual, you know, entertainment and documentary viewers. I mean, we got a lot of that in this. I mean, the last 2 years, I suppose, has really been the era of the documentary, right? You know?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you said, you know, we had Wrestling with Shadows filmed back in 97, and we had Beyond the Mat. But there hasn't been too many other wrestling documentaries. There have been some small-scale ones, but no real big ones. I mean, lots of really small-scale, low-budget ones have come out on British wrestling, all sorts of other different types of wrestling. I mean, Colt Cabana, if you look at his road diaries, in a sense, he was doing a documentary as well in those docs that he did. He was doing a similar type of thing, wasn't it, where he's going on the road with the camera? But, I mean, the Vice thing, I mean, the first season was obviously a success, and it was a second season that was commissioned. And one imagines that they'll be doing another season as well. I don't know that that's been announced yet, but I would have thought that they will be.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Do we know yet if it's going to be another season?
I think so.
I would think that, I mean, there's plenty of other subjects that they can tackle. So, I can imagine it will come back again. And they've got the format down to a fine art now. They've established that there's an audience for it. So I can imagine they'll keep them coming. And maybe David Arquette will be part of one of those.
Who knows? Well, all the best to David Arquette. I think we're going to get into something probably that we've never covered really before. And we won't spend too much time on it, obviously, because you did mention that we don't kind of want to bore people with too much detail and stuff. But we had an idea where we said we'd do a broad breakdown of the kind of the last few months, I suppose, of the ratings between obviously NXT and AEW, but just in general the ratings, and kind of, I suppose, looking at it from maybe a different angle, because this all we're hearing nowadays is the demo god and stuff like this, and you know, people bringing in ploys as to how this rating works in someone else's favor and blah blah blah, give them bragging rights. I know you're a man that likes to post the ratings up pretty regularly on Facebook. So give us kind of an idea of where we're at right now, and I suppose on how much it matters, I suppose, from 2020 to maybe, you know, the late 90s and early 2000s.
Well, I mean, ratings obviously do matter.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that people are talking about them illustrates that. The fact that WWE, for well over a decade now, its number one revenue stream has been TV rights fees. I mean, even when, you know, they were still doing pay-per-views and still pulling up some good numbers on pay-per-view, they were making more money each year from TV rights than they were from the pay-per-view arm of the business. So it's obviously very important. The demo god thing, Chris Jericho's latest nickname for himself.
Yep.
Obviously, it's divided up into 18 to 49. So, I mean, that is the desired demographic, isn't it? That's the people that you want watching your watching your program, because they're the type of people that big money advertisers are more likely to want to. If you're attracting a higher number of 18 to 49, then you're more likely to attract advertisers who will be willing to pay more money to advertise on your program.
Sure.
So, you know, this is, you know, there is a reason for this. The fact that Jericho's bringing this up, that 18-49 is the desirable demographic, and AEW each week I think almost every week, not every week, but almost every week, even when in the weeks when NXT has drawn more viewers than AEW, AEW usually wins the 18 to 49 demographic. So that's why it's being brought up on a regular basis by Chris Jericho and others. So it absolutely does matter. Obviously, your TV program, your channel that you're on, your TV station partner wants people to watch the program. I mean, it's just, you know, this is stating the bleeding obvious.
Yeah.
Isn't it? You know, if they're paying, you know, millions or tens of millions, or in WWE's case, hundreds of millions for a program, then they want people to watch it. You know, so that USA Network or TNT or whomever, obviously USA Network and Fox in the case of WWE, are featured highly in the cable charts each week, because the television industry is keeping an eye on those. You know, look at the numbers, what are people watching? Oh, they're doing really good in 1849. We've got this product we want to advertise. Where should we advertise it? I know, let's advertise it on next week's episode of Dynamite. Or let's advertise it on next week's episode of WWE Raw or SmackDown on NXT. So all these things definitely do matter. As far as WWE is concerned, Raw, as most people know, drew its lowest ever rating for the program, lowest ever viewing figures for the program in July. The numbers are slightly higher now, but still small beer compared to what they were drawing 20 years ago.
Sure, sure.
So, and in a sense, it's the people saying, well, WWE needs to address this, it's a matter of urgency. And in a sense, it is, because obviously you don't want to be running viewers off. You don't want to be hemorrhaging viewers each week. You want more viewers to be sampling your product and then watching it each week and telling the friends, and, you know, because then that leads to more network subscriptions. You're going to sell more merchandise and, you know, everything, you know, traditionally was powered by the TV. The TV would advertise the product. The product would then persuade you to purchase merchandise or pay-per-view events, or as network subscriptions as it is now. So you're going to be more inclined to become a fan, a financial supporter of the product, if you are watching the TV program each week. This stands to reason, of course. But as far as people saying, oh, it's a matter of urgency that things need to change, in a sense, it's not, because WWE signed five-year deals with Fox and USA. That's correct, isn't it, Ian?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And they began last autumn. So, I mean, those deals won't come up for renewal until probably summer of 2023. They usually start negotiating about just over a year in advance.
Sure.
Like a year, 15, 16 months in advance. So there's no great sense of urgency for WWE to address this and get those numbers back up. Obviously, if they're still drawing, you know, an average of 1.7 million viewers per week for Raw, 1.7 to 1.8 million viewers per week for Raw, it's hard to believe that USA is going to pay the same amount of money in 3 years that it paid 2 years ago when it struck this deal that began last year. So it absolutely does need to do something about it, but it's not a matter of you know, it's not a matter of life and death type thing. It's not like this company's going to lose its TV slot and go out of business, you know, if it doesn't turn these numbers around within the next 3 or 4 weeks or next 3 or 4 months. It's got time to work on this and get it right. But, you know, as I said, there's no way that you can spin this. This is bad news for WWE in terms of viewing figures. I mean, sure, it's still immensely profitable, the company. I mean, it's making huge money. I mean, this year it'll make more money than it ever has. So, I mean, that's the other thing, of course, is that this company, even in a worldwide pandemic, when it can't run shows before fans, is still making tremendous amounts of money. So, I mean, that's kind of the contrast, isn't it? There's, you know, it's kind of almost it's almost like a paradox, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that you've got a company that on one hand is drawing its near lowest numbers ever for its flagship program, but at the same time is more profitable than it's ever been. So it is an interesting subject to discuss. But I mean, don't really be swayed by people catastrophizing.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, certainly, in this day and age, people often look for drama when there's no real drama to be found. And I think people, in a sense, are making more of this than they should. But I absolutely do accept the fact that WWE does need to work on its product to try and attract more people each Monday and Friday night. So what's your take on it, Ollie?
Yeah, no, I concur. You know, when you've got those big deals, I think AEW, the closer to the time their deal expires, needs to kind of be looking at what they're offering, I suppose. But as you say, people might look and say, oh, well, this is shit programming. Of course, TNT won't be happy with this. But like you mentioned, if they're bringing in numbers big enough, especially within that demographic, all they care about is the advertisers, as you mentioned. I mean,
AEW hasn't even been on the air. Sorry to interrupt you, Ed. I didn't really talk about AEW. I'll just quickly say this, and I will shut up. But AEW hasn't even been on the air for a year yet. So, I mean, they haven't got the huge track record that WWE has.
Exactly.
The one constantly quotes. Whereas for AEW, I mean, last week's numbers were very, you know, I think they did over 900,000 viewers last week for Dynamite. I think that's correct. Mm-hmm. And, so, I mean, they're actually doing pretty well.
They are.
I don't think they're in. Yeah. They're obviously not in the same position that WWE is, where their numbers have, you know, basically collapsed since this new TV deal started. I mean, I know when AEW started, its premiere episode, I think, was it about 1.4 million? It was something like that, wasn't it?
That was their first, yeah. I'm pretty sure that was the number.
So they're not doing those numbers now, but the numbers actually have been climbing steadily in recent weeks.
And that's all they can really ask for, do you know what I mean? It's all they can really ask for. And plus, it is a relatively new show, so you've got to give them that couple of years as well to kind of really find a groove, I suppose, if there is a groove to be found. So, I would agree with that. Speaking of AEW, just some interesting caveats, I suppose. Obviously, Chris Jericho is their biggest star. He seems to always find a way to pop up on Dynamo's Dozen when you and me are speaking. But in this particular incident, Jericho's been a very big man in the news these days. Obviously, he had that feud with 80s, 90s rock star Sebastian Bach. For anybody that didn't hear about that, that was funny. They had a bit of a war of words on Twitter. Sebastian Bach accused Jericho of singing to a backing track on his live gigs and that he wasn't a very good singer in general.
I think that's a fair point. I think that's absolutely a fair
well,
point.
I think, when Sebastian Bach, I mean, for anybody that's not familiar with Sebastian Bach, if you like your rock and roll, Sebastian Bach was kind of one of these, kind of like a glam rock band that kind of came out just into the late 80s, early 90s. I was a fan, still am a fan of their music. They were very kind of in the Guns N' Roses kind of genre-ish, with Bon Jovi kind of. But Sebastian Bach.
Yeah, Skid Row. I saw them in 1991 in Glasgow, I think it was, or could have been Edinburgh.
Yeah.
So I was a fan as well, Skid Row. Good. I mean, they had some pretty good numbers back in the day.
Great, great band. And I mean, Sebastian Bach is one of the greatest vocalists of a generation. So for Sebastian Bach, have an opinion on someone's vocal ability, he's a very valid. It'd be like, not quite as high, but it would almost be like Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden. If he tells you that you're not a great singer, then you should probably listen to him, you know? I think Sebastian Bach, but it kind of got a bit heated between the two, and then Sebastian Bach was challenging Jericho to a fight and all this kind of stuff. So it was quite, it's quite funny. Two 50-year-old men, with the long hair, still going, still rocking out, and hopefully they can.
I mean, there was that very famous image, wasn't there? Of you probably seen it, being a Skid Row fan. Someone in the crowd hurled a bottle at him.
Yes.
And it hit him in the head.
Yes.
And he actually jumped into the crowd and got stuck in.
He dropkicked the guy.
I don't know whether he actually hit the guy that he meant to, and I think that did end up. I'm not really going to discuss that any further because I think it did end up being problematic for him.
It did.
I mean, I remember that was a huge story at the time. So, I mean, the guy's obviously, you know, he's got some balls, you know?
Yeah, he definitely has balls. And I'm sure he still likes a cocktail or two. So I'm sure there was many a cocktail had when those tweets were going out. Drunk tweets, never a good idea.
No, but I mean, I've got to say, there's quite a weight disparity. You know, he's giving up a few pounds. Last time I saw Sebastian Bach, he was still pretty slender guy. I don't know whether anything has changed since then.
Well, he's still pretty slender, but I think that was another thing he was doing with Jericho, was calling him a midget too, wasn't he? He was calling him short.
Right.
Which I took offense to, because Jericho's the same height as me, so I was quite offended by the jibe of height. But that's just funny.
Watch yourself, Sebastian Bach.
Yeah.
Dynamo's dozen coming for you.
Dynamo and Jericho teaming up just to whoop Sebastian Bach. I don't think he'd need me, to be honest with you, but... Yeah, so
I've got to say, if there was a fight going on between those two, my money would be on Jericho.
Oh, listen, Jericho, you know, didn't back down to someone like Goldberg or Brock Lesnar. I don't think Sebastian Bach's going to be a problem for him. So, another thing, obviously, another piece of Jericho news. Obviously, there's been a bit of a witch hunt I've seen on certain forums on Facebook and whatnot. And maybe a witch hunt might be too strong, but it is of sorts. Because he played that Sturgis gig over the weekend, the biker festival where we used to have Road Wild and Hog Wild.
Yes.
And he played, obviously, to that. And it seems that some of the SJWs have decided that it's Jericho's fault and he should be banned from AEW in some sections, and just banned from life in general because of the lack of social distancing and stuff. I'm not too sure how familiar people are with how gigs run and stuff like that, but my thoughts might be that the guys running the festivals, the promoters, sponsors and stuff like that, there would have been probably financial implications as well, I'm sure. But I think to solely blame Fozzy on a rock gig when people, I suppose, just want to feel some sort of normality. I mean, I can understand both sides. I can understand both sides. It's not really for you or me to kind of to be the judge and jury of it, I suppose. But, what do you think?
I mean, this has got to be one of the few festivals that wasn't cancelled.
Yeah.
So, from what I read, a lot of the locals were really upset that it wasn't cancelled. That's what I read.
Yeah. It's a small enough town outside of Sturgis, anyway, about Sturgis itself.
Yeah. I always remember, you know, Hogwild as it was originally, and then they had to change it to Roadwild.
Yeah.
Complaints from the owners of the Hog name. Was it Harley Owners Group? I think it is.
I think
is
so, right? Yeah. I think that's it, actually. Yeah, good memory.
Yeah. No, they had to change the name. And I remember somebody I knew who worked at WCW said to him, don't call it Hog Wild. This is going to upset those people. You know, and these people are going to be aware of it, that you are using the name, because it's for a biker rally. So the next year it became Road Wild as a result of that. So he was absolutely right. But that was WCW back in 1996. I mean, they were so damn arrogant at times you couldn't tell them anything. It was only when it started getting a bit messy that they would have to react, and then people up in the tower would say, you can't do that anymore. So, I mean, as far as, you know, this Sturgis concert goes, yeah, possibly there were financial implications, and they were contracted to do it, and since the festival was going ahead, or the event was going ahead, then they had to honour the date. I don't know whether that is the case or it isn't the case. It's a tricky one in America, because they've got so many cases out there. I mean, it's obviously very, very problematic in that country. You know, lots of people have died. I think if you're going to go along to something like that, Jericho and his band Fozzy, I think you've got to be prepared for the flack that you're going to receive, because you are going to be called out for it. And I think you've just got to take it. Actions, you know, as they say, have consequences. I mean, I'm not saying that I wouldn't do it. I mean, well, I wouldn't, to be honest with you. I mean, not that I'm in a band or I'm going to be playing any gigs at Sturgis or anything like that. Oh, but I mean, I'm not going to be in that position. So it's very easy for me to say that, you know, you kind of almost become flippant in these situations. Oh, I wouldn't do that. But it's like, well, maybe I would have to, because I was contractually obligated to do so. And if I didn't, it was going to cost me a fantastic sum of money. So maybe I would have to do it. I think it's really difficult. All I will say is that I think, you know, Jericho, I think he's just going to have to eat this abuse or flack that he's going to receive for doing this, because obviously people are going to go for him for doing this, because in the times that we're in. So I think there are times you've just got to take the criticism, and you've just got to hope that it passes. And the good news is, in this day and age, the criticism usually does pass fairly quickly, and people move on to something else to be angry about.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah, I think I just find it ironic with some people, especially on social media, you know, because A, generally the people that you're abusing probably don't care what you think. But B, it's like, when you start calling people out, you just got to make sure you don't have skeletons in your own closet and that you're living by the same moral compass, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's kind of generally where my problem with social media comes in. But look, that's a conversation for another day. Interesting.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, you know, lots of social media, a lot of people get off on being really unpleasant to other people.
Very much so, yeah.
And you just do it to trigger them. Just to, you know, inflame tensions and trigger people. I mean, that's what social media is to some people. Unfortunately, it can be a toxic environment.
Yeah.
And at times, you know, I can imagine that a lot of people are piling on. They call it a pile-on, don't they?
Yeah.
A lot of people have piled on Chris Jericho for doing this. That was this past weekend, wasn't it, that he was at the gate?
It was.
The Sturgis event.
But I'm sure we'll hear about it on Saturday, on the Saturday night special, so it'll be interesting. What do you think of... what's your thoughts on the kind of revamped, I guess, the new commentary team on AEW now, obviously with Tony Schiavone, Jim Ross, and Taz in on the as the third man?
Excalibur's gone. Is this something to do with that footage that surfaced?
Yes, I believe so, because I was kind of watching that closely, because obviously Tony Khan had come out just very strangely and just kind of attacked Hogan and Linda Hogan over something that's happened a couple of years ago, and kind of basically said they'll never be on my show, and obviously, you know, using it as a tool to promote whatever kind of he wanted in AEW. I guess it was a stance, so it was obviously a tricky position for him, considering that these were very, very blatant comments made at an indie show by Excalibur. So I'm sure that they probably didn't even make a scene out of that and just said sorry, but on your bike. Which they had to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think Tony Khan has to be admired for his consistency there.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't happen in pro wrestling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, absolutely, you've got to admire him for that.
Yeah, I do. I do, yeah.
I heard those comments as well. I was not aware of that. And, and that was that mid-2000s? I think it was.
It was, yeah.
Because Kevin Steen was involved, wasn't he?
Yes.
One of the angles, I believe.
Yeah, he was with him.
And it kind of pretty amazing, really, that in the mid-2000s that would be used as for cheap heat.
Yeah.
In the mid-2000s, I mean, no, you cannot do that. I'm kind of astounded that even happened.
Me too. I was very shocked.
Tony Khan had to act. Absolutely, he did. I've got to be honest with you, I'm not a fan of Taz. I'm not a fan of Jim Ross either. My favourite one of the three is Tony Schiavone.
Me too.
I think he's a guy that really feels like he's enjoying himself.
Yeah.
I think at times with Jim Ross, he expresses his... I think Jim Ross at times comes across as a malcontent on the air.
Yeah.
It's like, hold on, your job. Your job is to promote this product, you know, just promote the product. That's your job. And at times it was on AEW a couple of weeks ago, and there was the Inner Circle were out, and it was, July 29th, it was actually, 2 weeks ago. And this was, I think, the week after Orange Cassidy had dropped the orange juice on him, and Jericho's complaining about his jacket smelling of orange juice and it's a disgrace and everything. And then someone said, you know, and Jericho said, what does that smell like? I can't remember who it was. And he said, oh, it smells like cat pee. And then they all left. And I played this back. I thought, did Jim Ross really say that? And the segment was pretty lame, I've got to say.
Yeah.
But the JR said on commentary, who wrote that? And I was like, did he really say that about an angle, a segment that's just broadcast on the program that he is paid to commentate on and promote? He's not an objective observer. He's there. He's a paid shill. It is his job to promote this promotion. That is what he does. You know, no matter what they do, he's got to kind of try and find a way of selling it to the audience. And he said, who wrote that? He's obviously disapproved of the content of that segment.
It's really, it's kind of like, yeah, because, I mean, Jim Ross is obviously old school. You can tell that deep down he probably has the same feelings that, you know, Jim Cornette would have to a lot of this stuff in the business. But you kind of, but at this stage, while you're there, you know what you're getting into. Do you know what I mean? Because to me, it looks like, I mean, the fact that Tony Khan apparently is the head decision maker and writer and calling the shots behind the scenes and blah, blah, blah. You know, we've not seen any breakout star, so to speak, yet. That's an actual star, you know what I mean? I think we've had this conversation before. I think the Young Bucks and Omega, they just think that they are stars anyway already, and they probably are stars to their core audience, so they're probably they probably don't really care about breaking out beyond that, which is fine. I thought Hangman was going to be
I think Kenny, as a babyface, just kind of feels like he's coasting.
Yeah.
And I can see him possibly erupting as a heel. Now, I think he's got a lot more mileage in him as a heel character, because he just feels like low wattage. Like he's not really trying. Like he's not trying to do anything new or different each week.
Yeah.
He's like some old timer who's like, that's it. I'm over now. I don't really need to do anything more. That feels like his mindset towards AEW.
But he's kind of, we've had this conversation before, he's not over in the States the way he was in Japan, you know what I mean? And that's the thing. I'd like to see someone piss on his chips or something, like, to really get him angry, you know? Do something, I don't know, just, I don't know, take a dump on his floor or something, just to get a reaction and get him real angry. I'd love to see an angry Kenny Omega, because even when he was doing that kind of hardcore stuff with Moxley, he performed well on some of it, but you never get the feeling that he's really angry. Do you know what I mean?
It doesn't feel like he's giving us any real emotion.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly what it is. His facials kind of just stay the same. The jazz hands are always going, and, you know, he runs a million miles an hour. And obviously he's super talented at what he does. There's no question about that. I think the Young Bucks, I've seen some good stuff from them in AEW at times. Sometimes it's maybe 10, 15 minutes more than it needs to be. But, like, you know, maybe even 30. But I'm trying to be nice here. Like, if they are, you know, they are talented guys, and I don't want to sound like a cranky old guy either, because I want all these guys to succeed. But I think we talked off air, and we kind of need to mention it before we kind of wrap up. Obviously the incident last week between Sammy Guevara and Matt Hardy. What's your take on that?
Well, Matt's in the ring. He does the promo. He's got the red hair, so I mean, there's still like a knob there to broken Matt. But apparently now Matt's his own man. This is the real Matthew Hardy.
Yes.
So that seems to be a contradiction there. He says, you know, I listen to my audience, and AEW in general listens to its audience. And the majority of the audience that is watching Dynamite on their television, the millions every single week, I didn't realise it was millions. Yeah. Well, apparently it is. It's millions. They want to see me focus on being me. So, and then Hardy's talking about, because, you know, he had that spell where he was the mentor at a private party.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you know, the proverbial, you know, square peg in a round hole. I mean, there just didn't seem to be any chemistry between them. And I have no idea why they were put together. So he was kind of like pushing them away, but doing it in a very respectful fashion. You know, if they need my help, I'm there for them. I've got their back. So I thought he handled that well. But he was really just stating that he's his own man now, and it's all about him. Then he moved on to Sammy Guevara. I said, you know, at one point I wanted to help Sammy Guevara, but now I just want to hurt him. And that was the cue for Sammy Guevara to appear from under the ring and attack Matt Hardy from behind. And then just as Matt turned around and saw Sammy, amazing how he knew he was there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Amazing how he knew he was there.
Spider senses, yes.
That's exactly it. And then Matt says, Sammy, I knew you'd come. So again, it's like, well, hold on a minute. I thought Brock and Matt Hardy was a thing of the past.
Yeah.
But, you know, you still incorporate elements of that anyway. That's, it's not really such a big deal compared to what we're just going to talk about now. So they start brawling. Now, I mean, we've seen some feeble brawling from people over the years in pro wrestling. So I'm not saying Sammy Guevara's brawling was the worst I've ever seen. But I mean, my God, it was bad. Was that brawling bad or what?
It was, yeah, it was very forgettable. It would be, yeah. It was pretty, atrocious, if I'm being honest.
I mean, it did not look to me like Sammy Guevara was a tough guy. And this is a frequent knock, a frequent criticism of AEW, is that you have a lot of guys there. And this was, I remember this back in the 90s in British wrestling. This was, you know, and this is what changed really in the 2010s with British wrestling, where you're obviously aware of this as well, same as in Ireland, really actually in the 2000s, but really became more prevalent in the 2010s, is that I really feel like people in, you know, the Brit-Irish scene took the whole thing far more seriously,
yeah,
and worked on their images and their physiques, and they wanted to look like wrestlers.
Yeah.
And back in the 90s, you go back when it's, you know, really struggling, you've got loads of guys out there who don't really look like wrestlers. And that, I think, was a big part of the, certainly the boom period of a couple of years ago, where you've got a lot of men and women as well who have really worked on their image and really looked the part. Obviously, Sammy's in great shape and everything, but the whole way he's throwing punches and forearm blows, I mean, he just looked like a bit of a weakling, really.
Yeah.
And we want to believe that wrestlers are tough. And I think fundamentally that is so important. And that is something that AEW, that's a frequent complaint, that you've got all these matches in which far too much happens. People kick out too much stuff. And there just isn't that. They just aren't realistic. The matches don't feel realistic, which I find ironic, since when AEW was launched, the whole focus and the push and the whole mission statement was, we are going to do sports-based pro wrestling. That was what they said, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like they've kind of deviated from that with these matches that feature far too many kickouts, some big moves, and just, you know, not even semi-detached from reality half the time. They're not even a bus ride from reality. They're a long-haul flight from reality, some of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, Sammy's there, bro. Calling me Matt Hardy, and it looked crap. So Matt makes a comeback, hurls him over the, I think he hurled him over the guardrail. Then Sammy makes the comeback, shoves Matt into the ring post. Looked like he hit the ring post pretty hard as well. Then gets a table. Actually, I think it was Matt who set the table up, wasn't it? Matt set the table up.
Yeah.
And Sammy makes the comeback, shoves Matt into the ring post. Matt's stunned, places Matt on the table. And then why don't you take it from here?
Yes.
As to what happened next.
So, Matt Hardy's on the table, and Sammy Guevara, while he's lying down, this is key as well in this situation. He's lying down, so already he's not postured himself to do what he's about to do next in any kind of safe environment, in any safe way. Picks up the chair. Now, obviously, rumors had it like, oh, he picked up the wrong chair, was meant to be, inverted commas, gimmicked, the word that likes to be thrown around these days a lot. But as you mentioned to me as well, gimmicked or not, tampered with or not, he threw the chair in a way that was just, I mean, I don't know whether he ever even watched Sabu wrestle before, but you watch Sabu and how he was able to do it, and people call him reckless, but, like, I mean, Sabu knew how to throw a chair, you know?
Absolutely.
Folded in a perfect way, you know, so it's kind of the flat part is going at you, and it gives you a chance, I guess, to get your hands up just in time, because, you know, no one says that by rules you're meant to take it in the head, because in general, if you were in a pub and someone threw a chair at you, the first thing that would happen is your hands would come up, so I've no problem with that.
Yeah.
No problem.
And especially now in 2020, I mean, back in the 90s, obviously people took unprotected chair shots as a matter of routine.
Yeah.
Now they don't.
Exactly, exactly. Because the thing, and it makes more sense that you do put your hands up, because you do, it's a reaction. I mean, if a football is coming at your face, the chances are you're going to try and put your hand up to stop it. So, anyway, I digress. He throws the chair, which, and I mean, this is brutal, catches Matt Hardy, obviously at one of the angles, at edges of the chair, and splits Matt open in a really, really gnarly looking cut there. Matt is bleeding bad, and he looks literally out of it. I think you used, to steal one of your analogies, he looked not from this planet, put it that way.
And like he was in the broken universe.
He was, he was.
Back at the heart, you know, bodily he was there at Daly's place, but like mentally he was at the Hardy compound.
Oh, he certainly was, man. And then, you know, what any pro would do, well, I mean, most pros wouldn't have allowed that situation to happen anyway. You made a good analogy to me. I don't want to be stealing your stuff. You know, instead of maybe picking Matt up and kind of shown, you know, making chicken salad out of chicken droppings, he could have showed, you know, the camera, the hard camera, look what I've done to him, you know, giving him a couple of worked little punches. I mean, his worked punches are bad anyway, so they weren't going to hurt him.
Exactly.
And that could have been it, you know what I mean? Kind of make a Stone Cold moment by accident, like a Becky Lynch moment, you know?
Yeah.
But then,
I mean, he could have put his hand in the blood.
Yeah.
Like maybe take the blood. I don't know whether he would have been allowed to rub it on himself or whatever, but he could have held him up to the camera with the blood. And they weren't shy about showing the blood afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
So that wasn't a consideration, was it?
No.
I mean, if this was WWE, they'd probably get the camera off him. But, I mean, AEW, there was no problem. This is rated TV-14, so the blood was fine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, he could have been something called an audible and done something spontaneous there rather than what he did next, right?
Yeah, and why don't you take it as to what he done next?
Yeah, so Matt's lying there. I mean, I think Tony Schiavone, it's funny, we were just talking about commentators, and Tony was the guy who made the best call here. And this is what Tony said. He's lucky he didn't just poke an eye out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Schiavone was obviously horrified by what he just witnessed. I mean, Schiavone's been covering this business for nearly 40 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he knows what he's on about. I mean, on and off, of course, but he goes back to, like, early 80s. And it's just like, actually, maybe even longer than that. But he's been around long enough, longer than we have, put it that way.
For sure.
So, I mean, Tony was being very honest there. And then, yeah, Sammy then climbed onto the stage and then hits this crazy spin, flippy, twirling, tumbling bump onto Matt Hardy. And we were talking about this before we went on the air, you know, lands on Matt Hardy's abdomen. And he's had all sorts of problems with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a bit of a strange landing for him. He didn't seem to be completely in control on that spot.
No.
So he smashes through Hardy, the table breaks at least. And then he departs, and we get the shot on Matt Hardy, and there's blood everywhere. I mean, he's bleeding heavily. It's hard way, obviously, not a blade job.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, they moved on pretty quickly after that. They did not linger on Matt. And they did show us the blood. And I know Matt's tried to turn it into an angle online. He's done, like, a video about it, talking about it. So one imagines that he will bring it up on tonight's Dynamite, the August 12th Dynamite, which obviously hasn't taken place as we record this. So, you know, I'm sure they will use it for angle effect to try and promote the feud between the two, which is what they should do. They should try and capitalize on this reckless act by Sammy Guevara. But, I mean, you know, people might try and spin this and say it was an accident, and in a sense, it was. But at the same time, it's like, well, he deliberately threw the chair like that with tremendous force at Matt's head. I'm just baffled as to why he did it. I cannot understand it.
If he put as much force into his brawling as he did to that chair shot, you might be onto something there. You know,
he might be.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but it's it's not a nice way to wrap up the show for us here, but at the same time, it needed to be talked about because I do believe it was unsafe. I was I was quite into the idea of Sammy Guevara when he came out. I do like kind of the cocky, arrogant kind of... I know, Jim Ross has often said he's like a young Eddie Guerrero, but you know, I think that's probably that's a major tribute there. But
yeah, I think that's a bit of an exaggeration. Yeah, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't.
He's not that level. So, but I mean, and also, you know, he's only been back a few weeks after his suspension for the comment that had come out that he made about Sasha Banks, and you would think that he would want to be on his best behavior when he returned. You know, I'm not suggesting for a moment that he deliberately set out to hurt Matt Hardy here, but I mean, and absolutely wanted to do this because he's been vindictive.
No,
I think it was more reckless. I think it was more reckless rather than, you know, he was trying to do it because he wanted to injure him. I'm sure that wasn't his motive, but I mean, how can you do that move and how can there be any other outcome? And Tony was right. He could have. Actually, I think he was all right. I think he threw it. I think the legs were... He had the legs in his hand, so it was actually the top of the seat of the chair that hit Hardy. So, I mean, let's at least give him credit for that. I think that was the way he threw it. So he didn't throw it legs first. But obviously, Tony wasn't aware of that because it all happened very quickly. But I think that's the case. But, I mean, such a reckless act. I mean, I've seen some crazy things in my years watching wrestling, and I probably have seen things that are crazier than that, but that was right up there. I was really quite shocked by that scene. Should never have happened.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that is kind of all the time we have for this week, but it's a talking point to end the show because it does kind of, as you mentioned, lead us into tonight's episode of Dynamite and to see, I guess, what comes from it. But Finlay, as always, been an absolute pleasure. And I'm sure we will speak again very soon on the show.
Yes. Yeah, likewise. Thank you very much for having me on. The time has passed far too quickly, as it always does.
Always does.
So always does. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I'd love to come back again in a couple of months. So the one good thing about pro wrestling is there's always something happening. So there's always plenty to talk about. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll be back again. If that's all right with you in a couple of months, maybe October.
My pleasure. Absolutely, my friend. It's my pleasure. Halloween Havoc month. it's always my pleasure to have you on, Finlay. Glad you and the family and your loved ones are doing well and staying safe. And just trying to...
I've got to say, we're doing all right. You know what? There's a lot of people out there that have had it really tough and are going to have it really tough in future.
Yeah.
And I really feel for them. I hope, you know, it works out for them the best it can. I mean, I've got nothing to complain about.
Well, look, when this is all said and done... You know,
yes.
When this is all said and done, I'll be definitely, hopefully be meeting you in person when you get over to the UK. You can show me the best pub with the best pint and I'll be a happy man.
Yeah, look forward to it. Can't wait.
Awesome. All listen, right. For me, for Finlay, that is all we have time for. That is Dynamo over and out. Join us next week for more of the comeback of Dynamo's Dozen.